This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace, the easiest way to create beautiful blogs and websites and push content to your social networks.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 82, A Squint Away from Success. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today isn't Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including possible Blu-ray plans for the animated series and the story of Filmation, Creations, TNG Reunion and Grand Slam, new toys from Diamond Select, and our thoughts on the surprising story found in the first issue of Countdown to Darkness. Then in the feature, we're joined by Michael Fisher and Matthew Rushing to discuss why two Rikers are better than one in Second Chances. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. You've grown your hair out and shaved your beard. What's going on here today?
Yes, Chris, I am back on the hormones. I decided that I wanted to be this way, and I am blossoming, both as a person and in my breasts.
It really doesn't sound like you. Those are some fast-acting hormones, apparently.
I've been taking more than the recommended dose because I want this to happen really fast. This is who I really am.
Oh,
have I gone Charmin. Too far?
I think
Greg
is going to
kill me,
you
I think.
After hearing that. So, yes, everyone, it's not Greg with me today. It is our managing editor, Mistress Charlene Schmidt.
Hello, hello.
So, Char, tell me, how are you doing today?
I am freezing in Fargo. It is approximately -8 right now, and I think we're expected to get a low of -25 tonight. We
wow.
are in, I think, what I hope is the worst of winter this week. So I'm doing my very best to stay warm, wearing several layers, and not going outside whenever possible. How are you?
I am not as cold as you are.
That's good.
I'm doing well. It's been actually beautiful here for the past few days. Tokyo got buried in snow last Monday, so I have seen a bit of snow still piled up here and there, but we've had sunny days and beautiful blue skies. We had a great weekend, a big family event, went out to the temple for my nephew's 1 month ceremony. He's 1 month old.
All right.
And so we had a good time.
Fantastic.
So, Char, why don't we jump into some Star Trek news here? And
Let's do that. The first story
we have today is an interesting one. Now, of course, The Next Generation has been remastered for Blu-ray in seasons 1, 2. They're working on 3. And Enterprise will be coming to Blu-ray shortly. There was an interesting article on TrekCore this past week where, at least initially, it seemed that CBS was preparing to remaster the animated series for Blu-ray.
Right. And apparently, these are just plans, according to the update, correct?
Yes. Well, according to the update, they are simply the assumptions of Robert Meyer Burnett as he was talking to TrekCore about the animated series.
Okay.
What happened was, in talking to TrekCore, and he was talking about what he would like to do with the animated series and what he would like to see, it seemed like he was saying that CBS was planning to put TAS out on Blu-ray. As it turns out, there are no official plans, although I suspect they probably will do it at some point. He said that when they did the DVD, do you have the DVD set of the animated series, by the way?
I do not.
You do not. You're not a TAS fan, I guess. I actually do have the DVD set. And when they did the DVD set in 2006, apparently they did a fresh HD transfer of the episodes. And so if they already have that HD remaster, it would be a lot easier for them to move forward with preparing the animated series for Blu-ray.
Right.
And of course, there are only 22 episodes of TAS in the first place.
Yeah.
So I have two questions for you anyway, Char. First of all, would you have any interest in a TAS Blu-ray set?
Well, you know what's interesting is when I first saw this article, I thought, hey, cool. I love the fact that they're going to do this. And then, of course, the update came out saying, hey, now, wait just a sec. It's just a thought. It may or may not happen, but I'm of the belief that it will happen. Certainly eventually, if not soon, because the HD transfer is so much easier. Sort of like what they're doing with Enterprise right now. Put in some extras and I'm in. Because that's what I'm about. I think I discussed this on To the Journey last week. I am all about the bonus material. Yeah, To the Journey!
So what would you want to see in bonus material for the animated series?
You know, I would love interviews with some of the people that maybe worked on the series. That would get me going. I mean, I know it was made a long time ago. Getting in contact with some of those people might be very tough. But I'd also like to know just about that time, because I feel like it's a very lost part of Trek history, where a lot of people don't even think about the animated series as a part of Star Trek in general. Well, you know, how did this animated series come about? And what was the production process like? Why was it only 22 episodes? These are things that a lot of people do not know. So I would love to know, I would like some interviews or maybe some kind of a presentation on that.
You know, my personal feeling in terms of why it only went 22 episodes is that visually, the animated series, it's very much a product of that time period. You know, it was done by a studio that was known for not doing the best animation, the best drawing, because it cost so much to have the actual actors in to do the voicing. You know, they had to kind of streamline the budget a bit. But also, I think it tells real stories. You know, the stories in the animated series are written by DC Fontana and the same kind of writers that wrote for the original series. And so the connection with the audience, it's being put on TV on Saturday morning cartoons for kids, but yet the stories are really Star Trek stories.
Right.
So it maybe it didn't quite find that niche there. To combine this with our second story and talk about special features, the second story is a book coming out called Creating the Filmation Generation. And this is a book that's being written by Lou Scheimer, who was the founder of Filmation. And it's also being written together with Andy Mangels. And there are a couple of interesting points here. This was another article on TrekCore. They said, and I actually didn't know this, they said that the original concept for the show was to have it running at the same time as the original series. So you would be able to watch TOS on Friday night, and then you'd be able to watch TAS on Saturday morning.
Yeah, this was not something that I knew at all. This is brand new to me. What do you think about that concept? I mean, would that have worked for you back then?
I personally don't like the concept. I don't understand, as a creative, I don't understand the thought process behind that. Really, I can see a few places where you might be able to justify it, where you have this kind of business plan of cross promoting or something in today's world, but not necessarily back, you know, at the end of the 60s. But I would love to hear more about that idea and what they were thinking about and why they wanted to do it that way and how it may have unfolded if it had been done. And of course, perhaps it could have been much more cost effective in that sense, because if they already had Shatner and Nimoy and everyone there doing TOS, they could have them read these lines for the animated series. And of course, they would have to pay them more.
Sure.
But it would have been a different financial dynamic than bringing them back several years later for this entirely new project.
Right. And in that sense, I see it working. But we're talking about two very different markets here. And since they were telling Star Trek-esque stories in the animated format, I just don't see that translating very well. So at this point, what I would like to know also is the story behind it. You know, just kind of what happened, the development of it, talking about it, and then ultimately it did not happen, of course, so why did it fall apart? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is an unknown. You know, we do have the current DVD set, and we do have some background into how the animated series that we know came about. But then there's this other history of it that even I wasn't familiar with. So I can see a lot of potential for extras on a TAS Blu-ray set that would not only fill you in on the animated series, but could bring to light some new information about Star Trek as a whole when TOS was in production in the late 60s, as well as what led to the animated series and then through the 70s, the aborted Phase 2, and ultimately the motion picture. Because the animated series, although fans tend to forget about it, it does have a place in that overall development of Star Trek, which ultimately led us to The Next Generation and beyond.
Right. And I feel that of any part of Star Trek's history, this is the time that has the most missing pieces. So we can learn a lot from any new information that's willing to come out there.
So if you're interested in this, there are two excellent articles over at Trek Corps, and we will put links to those in the show notes. And if you just go over there, trekcorps.com, you'll find them on the front page as well. At least probably for the next week or so. They always have new stuff coming out over there.
Oh, yeah. They're as busy as we are.
So, Shahar, let's move on and go past TAS and the original series movies and go all the way into The Next Generation and talk about something that Creation is working on right now that's coming up very shortly. And this is the Grand Slam Star Trek and Sci-Fi Summit 18.
Yes, this is happening in February in L.A., one of what's going to be, I think, a good handful of TNG reunions this year, celebrating the anniversary of TNG 25 years, getting the whole cast together to reminisce and have a, as Colin might say, jolly good time.
Yeah, that's right, a jolly good time. So yeah, this is coming up February 15th to 17th at the Burbank Airport Marriott Hotel, and it will be another opportunity for you to see the TNG cast reunited. I've enjoyed seeing videos of these reunions. Unfortunately for me, there's no way for me to actually see any of this stuff in person, being over here in Japan. But if you happen to be in the area, you'll be able to see the TNG cast. And you'll also be able to see a number of people from other parts of Star Trek, Connor Trinneer, Dominique Keating, Armin Shimerman, of course, Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
As well as Robert Picardo and Catherine Hicks. For all you, Greg will be thrilled about that because you know how much he loves the Star Trek IV.
Oh, you know it. Secretly, I think he really does like it. He just can't admit it at this point. And one other guest that I see on this list that I find quite interesting is Bruce Boxleitner of both Tron and Babylon 5 fame. So we've got a little bit more than just even Star Trek going on here.
Right. Yeah, it is a big sci-fi summit. It's not exclusively a Star Trek summit. And I think that's great, too, because, I mean, we all love Star Trek, but we all love most of us anyway. Many other franchises as well. Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, and of course, don't forget, the Bosom Buddies.
Right, right.
Now, is Tom Hanks going to be here? I don't know.
Not for this one, I'm afraid. You know, I think they probably asked him. He wanted too much money. He might have been busy on some other project, some movie he's making. I don't know. He's just one of those actors that's really hard to get because he's moved on from Bosom Buddies, and yet the fandom is still there. And someday, Chris, I think it'll happen, just not this year.
It's going to happen. Well, Did you not read IDW? They already have out the Countdown to Bosoms comic series, where they're going to lead you into the upcoming
really?
Bosom Buddies reunion movie that's coming out in 2014.
I've missed this. Yeah, I had no idea. This is great. I'll have to look for this.
You really got to fire up your Comixology out more often, Char.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a big comic reader, especially when it comes to Bosom Buddies. It just doesn't occur to me, but you've alerted me, and I will be looking out for that. Go ahead with your own
life. Leave me alone. So, anyway, this is your first big chance coming up here in LA area on February 15th to 17th. And then they go on to talk here about plans for Star Trek Las Vegas, which we are, of course, planning to attend this year.
Yes, we are.
And they've got that one up to 60 guests right now.
Yes.
And it's a big year for creation, a big year for the conventions and for all of us to see Star Trek. So if you'd like to know more about this event coming up, we'll put a link in the show notes. Of course, you can go over to Creation's website. And also StarTrek.com has more information on how you can get your tickets.
Fantastic. I have to say, I am so looking forward to Star Trek Las Vegas. Not just because of the guests, because of all the freaking cosplay I'm going to get to see and be a part of. Not just because I get to meet all of you that I've gotten to know at Trek FM, where it's going to be our big freaking reunion for the first time, where a lot of us are going to meet each other for the first time at Star Trek Las Vegas. It's going to be just this mind-blowing experience, all of this combined. It's going to be crazy.
It's really going to be crazy. I mean, let's not forget, people may have forgotten because we haven't talked about it in quite a while on here, that we are all going as a staff meeting. It's a group costume.
Yes.
It's the Trek FM staff meeting. We're all going to be attached to the table. The new element that we're throwing in is what's going to be happening on top of the table. And that's where Greg is going to be involved in an Andorian fight scene.
I've been attacked by an Andorian.
Right, yes. This is going to be a new feature, a very exciting feature. If you're going to be at Star Trek Las Vegas, please take video, because we're going to be a little preoccupied ourselves doing it, and post it on YouTube. I think it's going to be a must-see.
You know, if we really want it to be a hit on YouTube, I think we need to make sure that our dear listener, Renee, also known as Mares, is there. Because, you know, she's a Katian, and in order to have success on YouTube, you really need a cat in your video.
This is absolutely true. So, Mares, we are calling on you to be there. All the way from Germany. No big deal.
No big deal. All right. So, Char, next story is something that you wanted to talk about here. And this is something surrounding the Abrams versus Uhura that may or may not involve hugging.
And I really hope that it does involve hugging, because Chris Pine and Zoe Saldana are slated to co-host the Sci-Tech Awards this year, which I think is pretty freaking excited. This will happen on February 9th. And unfortunately, if you're kind of where I'm at, I'm not going to be able to see this. I mean, it's not on TV or anything, as far as I know. But, you know, I'm sure we'll see photos from the event online. And what I'm really looking forward to is Zoe Saldana hugging the nominees for each category.
So she's going to hug not the winner of each category, but actually all the nominees. So she's going to go out in the audience and hug each person. I like
it. She's a hugger. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they got nominated. Why not hug them all? She's got a lot of love in her heart. And Spock's not going to be there, so she's got to hug somebody.
Well, that's true. Now, but Kirk is going to be there, and I think that secretly she wants to hug Kirk.
She wants to hug Kirk, but Kirk wants to do more than hug.
That's true.
So Uhura knows better than to hug Kirk, because it leads to more than hugging. And so she has boundaries.
I have to say, in the Abrams verse, I think Uhura would kick Kirk's ass if he tried anything.
She probably would. I mean, let's not forget the bar scene. He puts his hands on her chest and she pushes him across the floor. So, hey, that was just a glimpse of what Uhura can do. If we really let her loose, who knows?
Who knows? Wow.
Yeah, it could be pretty intense.
So yes, this is going to be taking place at the Beverly Hills Hotel on February 9th. And it is part of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And it is the Scientific and Technical Awards. There are going to be 25 different categories. And Pine and Saldana will be presenting 9 of those.
Yeah, so not quite half. I don't know.
I think they chose 9.
What are they going to be doing in the meantime?
Hugging.
Hugging.
Thought we just went over that. Aren't you paying attention?
Yeah, I was thinking like costume changes or something, but that makes so much more sense.
Well, you talk about not being able to see it on TV. They do say that portions of this presentation will be included in the overall Academy Awards ceremony on February 24th. Now,
that's good.
I don't know if that means that we'll actually get to see Chris and Zoe during that or not. You know, the way they end up editing these shows down, you know, awards were also given in the following categories 3 weeks ago at a luncheon at McDonald's. Then at the end it says promotional consideration by McDonald's.
Right. Yeah. No. I hope that's not what they do. I want to actually see Chris and Zoe presenting some awards, but I guess we'll wait and see.
Maybe they will. Maybe they will. I mean, you've got to put Zoe on the screen. I mean, who else are you going to get better looking to put on the screen?
Right? Or Chris Pine and the two of them together?
Wow.
Man, even Riker's jealous.
The universe might explode.
It might. Yeah.
All right, Char, let's take a break from news for a moment to say thank you to our sponsor, Squarespace, and tell everyone how they can easily make the best-looking websites and blogs on the internet. Now, usually what Greg and I do is we talk about some of the different features of Squarespace. Since we've been doing that, you actually yourself have created a Squarespace account. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your hands-on experience using these great tools at Squarespace?
Yeah, certainly. I know firsthand just how awesome Squarespace really is. I've been working with it the last couple of weeks to kind of revamp my personal website and update my portfolio to what I feel is a much more user-friendly format, both for the viewer, but then like on my end, from what I was doing, this is about 1,000 times easier. For my portfolio, for instance, I've got some photography images, I've got some news page design examples that I have, a couple of other things, some logos and graphics I've designed. All I've got to do is just basically click and drag those babies over to their designated slot, and Squarespace takes care of the rest. And not to poo-poo on WordPress, because I used it for a long time, and it is pretty good for what it is, but Squarespace blows it out of the water, man. What I did in maybe an hour on WordPress, I did in a minute in Squarespace.
Yeah, you know, a situation like yours where you have to work with a lot of images, it's amazing how easy that is to do in Squarespace, because the gallery module, not only can you just, like you said, drag the images off your desktop right into your browser. You know, you don't have to, this is a great thing, you don't have to mess with a detailed file structure and folder system. You don't have to go into any special place and find the file and tweak all these settings and then insert it into post. You just put in a gallery, you drag your stuff over, and you can use an existing set that you've already dragged in, or you can just put some new ones in and you can add. And they have these amazing slideshows, different types of animations, and they're really tastefully done as well. They're things that when you go to a website like that and you look at it and you think, wow, how did they do that? I'd love to be able to do that. Let me go and search for plugins and find out how could I do that same effect on my website. But on Squarespace, there are no plugins to go search for. It's all right there in the edit window. You just choose a gallery. You drag it wherever you want it to be on the page. There are a couple of sliders, and you choose the style of that animation you want, and you're done. And it's truly a godsend
incredibly
for building a site like you are.
It's incredibly convenient because, not only are you not searching around for that plugin that works, but you can customize just about anything on the gallery. that you want. So if you don't like the timing of it or a certain little element of it, you can tweak it to what you want. And one thing that always frustrated me about plugins was there was always something that I just didn't quite like that I could not change. With Squarespace, you can change basically anything and everything. So that's been just downright awesome. I've really enjoyed that.
You really can. It's very easy within the dialogues to tweak and make adjustments. But if you know how to write CSS, you can go in and you can manually write your own adjustments and you can tweak anything you want in the site. And if you want to build an even bigger site and you want 100% control over everything, you can go into developer mode where you can have full FTP access and you can use the tools that you're accustomed to, combine those with the power of Squarespace to build even the largest websites that you can imagine.
It's really win-win, Chris. And then on top of that, regardless of which method in which you sign up, you get a discount. I believe it's Trek1 if you want to sign up. But before that, you've got the trial mode, which is what I've been using. You've got full functionality of the site. You can see how your site looks as you go along. And you can decide, okay, this is fantastic. I want to sign up for a plan. Or, I'm just playing around. That's okay. You don't have to sign up with a credit card right away.
That's right. And isn't that cool that you can go in and, you know, you've had the advantage of doing that completely risk-free for you. You just go in, you put in a username, you set up the site, and you have access to all of the tools for 14 days. And so, I mean, you can vouch firsthand how you can see for yourself how powerful it is.
It's been the most intuitive kind of online workspace I've used in a good long time to manage files and whatnot. I've been very impressed. And just for the record, I am going to sign up because I think it's totally worth it. So, we're not just spouting out all this praise for Squarespace because they're our sponsor. They really are that great.
And we're really not. And for me, I've been using them for about 5 years. So I am recommending them, not because they're a sponsor, but because I truly believe it is the best platform. And that's why Trek FM exists as it is now too, because it is built 100% on Squarespace. So Shar, let's tell everyone the pricing. Its standard plan is $8 a month. If you want more power, you can go unlimited for $16 a month. You get unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors, custom domain. If you sign up for the one-year plan, you can actually register a free domain through Squarespace. So if you need your own domain name, they've got you taken care of there. You get the advanced form builder, Google Apps, and MailChimp Sync. You can publish to Facebook, which is a really cool feature that you can tie in. And of course,
Absolutely.
You get that great support. So we would love for you to try it for free. Just go over to squarespace.com/trek. And then when you sign up, use the offer code TREK1 to get 10% off. And you'll be supporting our fantastic sponsor, Squarespace, and you'll be supporting Trek FM all at the same time. All right, Shar, well, let's jump back into Star Trek news. And, you know, one of the things we love to talk about on the Ready Room is the wide assortment of Star Trek toys that come out, especially the ones from Diamond Select, because they do some really cool stuff. And there was a first look on StarTrek.com this week of several things that are coming out. Now the first one's kind of odd. The first one is the Star Trek Enterprise rock art, which is described as a rock slab. What do you think about this?
Yeah, okay. I read about this first, and I thought, rock art, huh? Okay. I mean, okay, my in-laws work with fossil fish, and that's like one kind of like sort of like rock art kind of a thing, but this is very different. This is a thing that you've got to see for yourself. It really is cool, but if you just read about it, you think, what in the world? Why would I buy that?
Right?
So you got to take a look at it. And then once you see what they're talking about, it makes a lot more sense. And you think, oh, okay, yeah, I'd buy that.
I guess. Would you buy it? I'm not sure. I'm looking at it here. I don't know.
I would. I think it looks cool.
What it reminds me of is, you know, I grew up in Alabama, and in Alabama, it's very popular to buy commemorative plates. So you have plates with, you know, scenes from Alabama football games on them, or for me, I don't know, it's kind of an unusual thing for me, the idea of buying plates or slabs of rock to put around. But but if you're into that kind of thing, this one is going to sell for $29.99.
Yeah, but I just have to reiterate, take a look at it. There's a lot more to it than meets the description just in words. Once I saw it, I thought, okay, that's kind of cool.
Well, you know, what would be cool is if the rock were actually like a hardened bit of a horde, like a horda dropping that was shaped into this 5.5-inch slab, and then it cools, and then they put the Enterprise on it. That's right.
Well, that would be something, but then they'd probably sell it for more.
Well, of course. I mean, you're not going to get horda droppings for $30. Come on.
That'd be probably like, what? $29.99 as opposed to $29.99
at least. You know, I mean, it's dangerous collecting those things in the first place, so you got to build that into the price a little bit.
Yeah And I mean, okay, yeah, this is cool, but you know what's cooler, I think, are the little mini mates that they're going to come out with Admiral Kirk and Khan, Captain Picard and the Borg Queen, and we've also got Captain Sisko and some Jem'Hadar, plus Captain Archer and some Zindi. What's missing here?
You know, I agree. These are cool. But like you said, something's missing. I don't think I can play with this without an Andorian.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
That's not what I was talking about. Where are Kathy and Coco?
Where's the monkey?
The monkey!
I mean, how are we going to use our mini-mates to reenact resolutions if we don't have Kathy, we don't have Coco, we don't have the monkey?
Right? Oh my gosh. Okay, me and Tristan would pay really obscene amounts of money just to get the monkey from resolutions so that we could have Kathy and Coco and the monkey reenacting resolutions in the bathtub? Oh my gosh.
Well, you know what Tristan always says? Every Minimates set is made twice as good with the addition of a monkey.
Well, of course, yes. And he's right. And so without the monkey, I really think they kind of missed a very important element of this series here. But the rest of it is really, really good.
It is pretty good, yeah. So these are going to be available on the specialty market. So they're kind of like the bear bricks that I collect, if anyone's ever seen my photos of Kirk Bear, which I often post. And they're going to be two packs selling for $9.99 each. Now, there's one other thing here, Char. There is an interesting model of the Enterprise coming from Dragon Models, and it's a cutaway of the ship where you can actually see from the outside, as the name suggests, what the interior looks like.
Right. You can be on the outside looking in. And if you've ever wondered what exactly is on each little deck, well, here's your chance to take a little bit of a look.
This one is a little bit pricey, though. It's 18 inches long and it's $174.99. But,
yeah,
you know, it is a nice collectible. So if you are into collecting Star Trek ships and you want something that's unique, I don't remember seeing anything quite like this before. Might be something you want to pick up.
No, I can't recall either. It is cool. It is unique. Diehard collectors are going to pay the money to get it. I think I'd want to see it in person, I think.
Yeah.
Before investing in it. I think it seems like it's a very cool idea. But I want to know just how detailed it really is. I mean, I want to see a close-up.
That's the thing. And it is hard to tell in the photo, but I have a feeling that in person, it's probably quite impressive. Just looking at the photo.
So if I saw that, maybe I'd think it's worth that.
You might, yeah. All right. Maybe. So we'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. And you can go over to diamondselecttoys.com and find out more about those also. So, Char, as we move into movie news and rumors, we're actually going to sort of talk about the movie in the form of comics. Now, this week, about the time that this episode of The Ready Room actually drops, will mark the release of Countdown to Darkness number 1. And now you and I have both already had the opportunity to read this comic, and I thought it would be really interesting to talk about our first impressions, because already for me, some of what I've seen in the trailers is starting to make a little bit of sense. And that's even before we get to the last page and the big twist.
Yeah, there's quite a bit going on here. And we have a lot of contemplation going on. And of course, then we start getting into a little bit of an adventure, which of course is to be continued in part 2, and I'm sure the continuing parts, but I'll say that it gets pretty interesting toward the end there.
It does.
I'm very intrigued by where they're going with this.
It really does, and we're not going to spoil it, you know, by giving any details here, what's in there, but it's very well written. I was surprised, actually, going into it. It tells a real story, and it really sucks you in, and from the very beginning, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I recognize this from the trailer. Ah, okay, this is where it all begins. And as Matthew and I speculated on Literary Treks when we talked about what we think we might see in Countdown to Darkness, this was we recorded that before we had an opportunity to read the first issue. We remember that scene in the trailer where Pike is sitting with Kirk. And, you know, we know from other information that has come out now that something is going to happen and Kirk is going to be stripped of his command. You know, Pike tells him that you're reckless, you're going to get your whole crew killed. And we were hoping that this comic is going to, you know, lead us, tell us that background story, what happened that caused Pike to sit down with Kirk in the situation. And I think, you know, what we've seen in number one, I think that's exactly what we're getting from the beginning. They threw us right into the mission that is going to result in that scene.
Absolutely. Like you said, I think you can see some things from the trailer that help you connect the dots as to what's going to connect the first movie to the next one and make it a seamless transition. And all the while, though, you're completely involved in what's happening. I was very surprised with just how interested I really was in what was going on with this comic. I'm not a huge comic reader, I'll say that, but I thought it was very beautifully done. Like you said, the writing was really good, the art is fantastic. I really like where they're going with this. I'm intrigued. I can't wait for number two.
Oh, same here. Especially, yeah, with the twist. So everyone, this is coming out on the 23rd. You can pick it up in print, of course, from your comic retailer, or you can get it for your digital devices through the Comixology app or the Star Trek Comics app. Definitely pick it up. I mean, if you don't want to be spoiled going into the movie in any way whatsoever, then, you know, maybe you don't want to read this. But because I do think that by the time we get to the end, we're probably going to know who the villain actually is. Although the first one doesn't really tell us who that villain would be. But if you want to go into the movie with a background story so that perhaps you know why John Harrison is so angry and what's going on with Kirk and his crew, you know, this is going to fill you in. So I highly recommend it personally.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm going to be looking forward to the next installments.
So speaking of that, Char, the last item that we have here in news is still related to the comic. This was the big reveal on StarTrek.com of the fourth cover. Now, we knew that the first cover is Kirk, the second cover is Spock, the third cover is Uhura. We didn't know who the fourth cover was going to be, and there's been a lot of speculation that it would be John Harrison, because before the 2009 movie, the fourth cover of the Countdown series was Nero. But turns out it's not. Who is it?
It is, Klingon glory, baby.
That's
right. We are going to see Klingons.
Of course.
So.
On this cover, the Klingon is still wearing the helmet.
Right. What did you think about that? I thought it was kind of mysterious. Kind of like, oh, we're going to show you, but we're really not. You know, just more of the typical tease that we've been getting about this movie.
Yeah.
We're going to give you a snippet, but we're not going to give you a whole heck of a lot to go with.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is that I know the Klingons are going to be in the movie because that's been revealed that, yeah, there are going to be Klingon right. moments in the movie. I don't think that the villains in the movie are Klingons. I don't know exactly. I mean, so Cumberbatch is being portrayed anyway as the main villain. Now,
right.
we don't know who Peter Weller is playing. There seems to mm-hmm. be no information about Peter Weller, no photographs of him from the set. John Tenuto, when we did the show a couple of weeks ago with Larry and John, and we were talking about, you know, all the background of the Wrath of Khan, you know, we speculated that maybe Peter Weller is Khan and Cumberbatch is the villain who is on Earth carrying out the destruction, but he's not Khan, but Khan could still be there. But then again, maybe Weller's playing a Klingon. That is quite
right.
possible.
We just don't know at this point.
They're doing a really possible. Good job of keeping it all mysterious, I think, and feeding us just enough to keep this discussion going all the time without really letting us know what's going on. And if you go back and you listen to the Ready Room, you can see that we've been thrown off track time and time again as we speculate about things.
Yeah, people are all over the place as to who's playing what and what's really going to happen. They have done a very nice job of screwing us up and making us guess, and chances are nothing is right at this point because we just don't know.
Yeah, we really don't know.
I think Simon Pegg had a tweet where he said, I love all the speculation about the new movie. Nobody is right. Keep the guesses coming, or something to that effect, where it's, you know, you fools have nothing right at all.
Yeah, and I think he's right. And I think all of these leaks, you know, where they say, oh, Cumberbatch is playing a great Gary Mitchell, and all these leaks that have come out, I think a lot of it is actually being done intentionally to mislead everyone, because from the trailer, from the synopsis, and now from the first Countdown comic, I think that we are all probably off track on what's going on in this story. And I think that's great, because I didn't want them to do something super predictable and, you know, remake The Wrath of Khan. Or I like for them to mine tidbits from the original series in the prime timeline, but I don't want them to just simply redo what's already been done. And it looks like they are charting a new course here.
Yeah, they need to have a life of their own. We've already seen Wrath of Khan. And as good as it is, I don't want to see a clone of it with this cast. I want to see them do their own thing. So, like you said, I'm glad that they're most likely going into this direction. And I do think that the leaks are pretty much made to make us guess wrong, if you will. You know, they're going to give us just enough to form an opinion, but the truth is it's not enough to really know what's going on.
Possibly be better than having a Riker on board your ship, but having two Rikers, and that's what we got in the sixth season episode, Second Chances. And today we're going to talk about Second Chances, and to help us do that, we have back with us after a long hiatus, the lesser-known third member of the Riker duplication accident, Fats. Yes, it's Michael Fisher, Fats Riker Beard. Hello, Michael.
Happy to be back with my poor substitute for a Riker Beard this week. Thank you, Chris. Lovely to see you all.
I see today you are the Van Dyke Riker Beard, apparently.
Yeah. For some reason, the Riker duplicate made me think of Bob Ross, the legendary PBS painter. And he didn't really have a big beard, but he had a giant fro. And that's kind of what I thought was on Tom Riker's face for a while. So, yes, I am. I've got a little bit of Van Dyke Brown on my face.
Now that you mention it.
And also joining us today is Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Chris. How are y'all doing?
Now, Matthew, I have to admit that I don't actually know your middle name, but what I do know is that before the show today, you watched Second Chances twice. So I assume that you watched it once as Matthew, and then you watched it once as your transporter-induced duplicate.
I did, which was really strange because actually we were sitting on the couch facing each other and just kind of having this staring contest. And I didn't really get to pay attention to that second time because now he was there and it was really really kind of obnoxious. I wanted that second chance, but...
Did you get in each other's face like really close and start shouting?
Actually, we did, but we made sure to be leaning towards each other so we were even closer so we could really be putting out the vibe.
Yeah, were you sure to put your legs up? To really get that vibe out there?
Yes. Actually, he was on one side of the couch and I was on the other. We both had our legs up. The vibe was, I mean, I think we might have blown off a section of the roof of the house.
Wow.
Too much vibe.
Too much
vibe.
Be careful.
Always
woo!
Happens.
I'm just saying.
Power into that squint, man. You don't want to let the squint and the anti-squint meet.
Well, I have to say, I mean, Riker has powerful vibe in any episode and we got double
vibe.
Yeah,
it's pretty intense.
Mm. Damn right. Mm.
It is good.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just start off with the first topic, double the Riker, double the
I think we're already starting to cover that, aren't we? Double the vibe? I mean, come on. What more do you want in an episode here? This thing is off the charts in the
right?
swag factor.
Well, I don't know. I think you might need to ask Beverly that question.
Right?
Well, I mean, goodness. I mean, thanks, Chris, for bringing that up, because I've got to say, if anybody's going to give me relationship advice on the Enterprise D, I want it to be Beverly Crusher, because what does she tell you? Go for it. Hit that, because it's going to be good. It doesn't really matter what happens afterward.
Yeah.
Just do it.
It's kind of, I think, her general approach to pretty much everything, including her medical diagnoses and treatment. If it seems good at the time, do that. Mm-hmm. Hit that. Use that hypo spray.
Would you say that root is that root tastes pretty bitter? All right, good. Go ahead and rub that on there. I don't know.
You know
I mean,
what?
Does it work? I don't know. It's actually, what,
right. it's actually, and if the patient right? dies, well, I mean, they just didn't respond to treatment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, her question to Troy was, and then we were just talking in 10 forward. That's all I said. He walked me back to my room. And then, like, Beverly just expects after a good night, and then happens.
Yeah.
So, I'm just saying,
absolutely.
Beverly is the one you want to be taking out
Yeah, all you have
me.
To do is whine her and dine her.
Well, unless you're Captain Picard, and then you can, like, whine her and dine her and dance with her, and she's still like, I just don't know. Well, yeah. Unless, you know, that's Picard's duplicate, so I don't know. That's a whole different point. I watched this episode with three women. I watched this episode with my girlfriend and my female roommate and my other roommate's girlfriend. And when Space Tai Chi was kind of wrapping up and Tom Riker rolls up, and Beverly delivers that line that Gates McFadden did so wonderfully, where she was like, "What did she say?" She was like, "I think I'll be going now."
Yes,
or something like that. She was like, "I think I'm."
She's
done.
Like, "I think I'm done for the day."
Everyone in the room with me just immediately fell on the floor laughing. Like, it was the best delivery. It was the best moment
it was.
The whole episode.
It was good.
And then when she leaves and she turns around, she's like, bye.
Yeah, poor Deanna. Yeah. She
Yes. Yeah, she gives it like
because Deanna knows what's going to happen now.
That's such a good scene.
Yeah.
Well, no. Whatever. Deanna. She's the one who does this. She gets him on the floor. She knocks him on the floor. She gets on top of him and kisses him.
Yeah.
What's he supposed to do?
Dude.
Riker's Riker. He's going to do it.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah.
Of course he's going
to
go.
Without Beverly there, Troy knows she's succumbing to the vibe. And
exactly.
I mean, it's like it controls her. She has no choice. She must fall for it. And at first, she's a little scared knowing what she's getting herself into. But then, hey, after a little while, you just relax and enjoy it. And you ride the vibe.
It's like a tractor beam. It just sucked her right in.
There you go. We're being pulled in.
Well, you know what they say? They've always said on The Next Generation that actually Riker is the best pilot on the ship.
Absolutely. Yeah, like Geordi's like, I could do the job, but if you want the best pilot, man you want is Will Riker.
Yeah, Riker, he can always dock that right there.
He's pretty good at that reaction control system.
Yeah,
he's just big maneuvering large things, you know?
In small spaces. As long as we're talking about that, we might as well talk about how Riker, like how the Commander William Riker kiss, and apparently the Lieutenant William Riker kiss, is like the chin grab and then the devouring of half the face. It looks like that beard is just enveloping the victim.
Yes.
Nom, 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 nom.
I don't know how she breathes, but...
You could suffocate her.
Yeah, like and the only grosser kiss I think on the whole series, the only grosser Riker kiss is the one where he kisses Utah in the Vengeance Factor, where he really gets like half her face.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But this was right up there.
But I mean, it was so great because you know there's that scene in engineering, and they both put out the vibe. They both lean in, and they're both like really intense toward each other, and you just know that everybody else in engineering is feeling it. Like, I don't know how engineering didn't explode with that much vibe.
Right?
One thing I'll say about engineering is that on the Enterprise D, there was probably no one else there because it's always empty. But what you don't see on camera is that peephole from the Jeffries tube where Argyle is on the other side. Now, you know, Argyle, he was loving that scene.
Oh, man.
Argyle was glued to that.
I don't want to know what Argyle was doing behind those walls.
He was sucking back the gin and just
keep
like...
Keep squinting, man. Just keep squinting. Squint harder. Go ahead, man.
Argyle's like, you know, I've been hiding out in this Jeffries tube for 6 years, but it's really paid off right
now. Yeah, worth it.
Yes.
Like, this is what I've been waiting for.
This is why I'm here. Because
when Geordi's down here, there's no action.
Nothing.
Geordi's down here, every woman on the Enterprise asks for duty elsewhere.
Yeah.
But you put two Rikers together, and he's like, go ahead, man. Make my day.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, they should have had little Riker leaning stools on that pool table in engineering. There's nothing for him to put his leg up on. So he just has to extend his back leg. Yeah.
You do notice though too, he gets on the transporter and both of them put one leg forward.
I did.
They put that right leg forward.
I was watching for that. Yeah.
It's awesome.
And also he tugs on his tunic
very much.
Exactly
yes.
the same way as
yes.
well.
Yes.
That was pointed out, yes, in the room. And it, like, this is presumably his first time in the new uniform because when we see him, he's wearing the old, the shattered remnants of his, or the torn remnants of his old jumpsuit.
Right.
So we see him adjust his new uniform exactly as new Riker does. And for a second, I couldn't decide whether I liked that or not. I was like, was that a, because it's identical to the way Commander Riker does it, but it's like, you know what, that makes a whole lot of sense.
It's really just because if you notice, you know, Riker has become a little bit fatter. And so that collar is just so tight up there. He's just always trying to get that. You notice that
he's
always
there,
like, he's doing the neck thing and everything.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh my God, I really need somebody to let this collar size out. Cause this is ridiculous. I thought this was an extra large.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we shift gears for a moment here? Because Michael, you wanted to talk about some of the weird science that makes this entire story possible.
Right. I wanted to ask, and I was a little negligent this time around because I didn't actually refresh my my reading of the Memory Alpha article before we came on the air. I just finished rewatching the episode before we came on the air. And the science, the technobabble that tries to make this duplicate Riker possible, just I needed more. in order to stay on board with Star Trek this time. Like, usually I will give Star Trek the benefit of the doubt time and time again. But I understand that the attempted beam-up went awry. They got a version of Commander Riker on board, and that was fine. I can even understand that this strange field around the planet reflected the signal back to the surface. And, you know, I get that. I just don't understand where all the matter came from for this second Commander Riker. Like, you cannot, even Star Trek is keen to remind us that you can't make something out of nothing. And the only kind of like lip service that we get to this problem is Geordi saying something in the conference room when he's having his PowerPoint presentation with the very keen, like, you know, one arrow goes through the atmosphere and the other one gets reflected back, which is a very cool image for the audience to grasp. But he's like, well, they both materialized from the same pattern. I'm like, okay, well, we've never really actually known what a pattern is. Even if you read the TNG tech manual, you're like, this is really well written, but I don't think that I understand. And all I wanted was, and maybe it's good that we didn't get it, because if we had gotten some technobabble trying to explain this, it would have been Riker's made up of, you know, clouds and various pieces of atmospheric material, like Tom Riker is cloud man. So in one way, maybe I'm glad we didn't get it, but I just needed more. Did anybody feel the same way?
You know, I didn't feel like we needed more. I just wanted better, because I thought the technobabble factor was already pretty high, but I agree the explanation is just a little fishy, partially for what you said already, but then also when Beverly does the scan on how they're so completely identical, you would think after 8 years, experiences would reshape brain function just a little bit. That's called adaptation. And I mean, you're going to have a lot of common characteristics, yes, but practically identical? I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, she did mention that, you know, a lot of those things that form your brain happen very young.
Oh, and yeah, so she did have the Freudian
line. Relatively, yeah, is really relatively formatted. And two, I mean, it's only 8 years, so everything would be all the same except for, and when she says minor differences, the minor differences come from those experience from those 8 years. So I feel like they covered their butts as much as possible. But Michael's right. This is really, really soft technobabble science here.
I think Michael's question is from the perspective of matter itself,
yeah,
like actually creating the physical Riker entity.
We've never had
twice, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you could take, like you said, we don't actually know. I think what a pattern is a pattern is a digital representation of every atom in your body. And so this is the big debate actually about transporters is, do you actually kill the person in order to transport them?
Right. Oh, God, that's such a crazy debate, because it just does remind me of the way they do in The Prestige, and that's terrifying.
Yeah.
So I don't want to debate that here, but however it happens, you're basically transcribing all of the information that represents someone as a person, putting it into the computer, and then you're using that information to take matter in another location and turn that matter into that person. So I suppose that it makes sense to me in this imaginary world of 21st century science that you could actually take matter in two locations and use the same pattern to create two identical beings.
That would make a lot of sense to me. I think that the way transporters are supposed to work, you know, quote unquote, is that the matter that comprises you is actually converted to energy and then sent to another location, then reconstituted as matter. I think ultimately, though, although I am fascinated in the question, and I will probably stay up reading old Trek BBS topics, I'm fascinated by all that. It is also a really an opportunity to tell a story that you can really only tell in sci-fi, and I'm absolutely willing to deal with that Geordi's 2-minute PowerPoint. I'm like, okay, good. We've gotten this out. We've justified this to the extent that viewers need to have this justified.
Larry Nemechek's book does say that this is a one in a trillion transporter accident. Like, there's one in a trillion chances for this to happen. That's what the writers had said. So it was something that was going to be really unique. You weren't going to have this happening all the time. So they used this idea to tell a Riker story, but not just a Riker story, but to kind of reignite in some ways the Troy romance with Riker himself. And so that's what they were kind of using this as an idea for, and why they decided to go with it. Because at first they were like, I'm not sure. But somebody said to them, this is going to be a romance. This is going to reignite some things. And then they were like, okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank goodness this doesn't happen all the time, because just imagine, and it comes up in the episode where Worf and Data are talking, and Worf actually has a really good line there when he talks about, you know, maybe the reason that Riker, I think for the sake of this discussion, let's just go ahead and call them William Riker and Thomas Riker, yeah. Even though he doesn't actually take the Thomas name until the end of the episode. But why does Will and Thomas have this conflict going? And Worf says, well, maybe you see something in your duplicate that you don't like about yourself.
Totally.
But it got me thinking, what would Worf do with the duplicate of himself?
Start the countdown timer.
I'm pretty sure he would fight it to the death.
I was just going to say, I mean, the amount of time that duplicate Worf would exist in the universe would be measured in minutes.
Yeah. Death to the opposition.
Yeah. One universe, one Worf.
Oh! I challenge you to a duel, sir. Yeah. Do you want Batleth or Mechleth?
I demand the right of Chigtal. The duplicate killing.
Just Klingon fork.
Yeah, I was going to say
kill
that.
Your transporter clone.
Yeah, that's one where you kick each other's ass, you know, just like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the fact that the Klingon language actually has a single term for kill your transporter clone makes me really concerned about using Klingon transporter technology.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think their development of it had a few more mistakes than the Federation had. So they're used to this.
They lost a lot more than a beagle.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah, that was nothing compared to what Klingons have had to go through to develop it correctly.
Just kept turning people into exploding targs.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the topic, why don't we imagine what the other members of the crew would do with the duplicate on themselves? Mm. Now, how about, we're in engineering right now, how about Geordi? What would Geordi do if
there
were a duplicate Geordi on the ship?
I think that might be the most awkward conversation ever.
Right?
You know, just like... Hi.
Wow. Yeah. That.
How are you?
So what are we? I mean, but
do you have it better with the ladies?
No.
And then awkward long pause. Really?
Yeah.
And then just kind of like the FML moment.
I could see in the staff meeting where they put another screen and they have one Geordi on each end of the table and they have dueling PowerPoints.
They have like dueling PowerPoints.
Oh my God.
With dueling music.
They try to out techno babble each other.
Yes.
But no, you see, it's because of this, and this, if you will look over on my screen.
We're
going to
use the Soliton wave through the deflector dish. Powered out in a microjoule of,
No. The graviton pulse is going to negate that.
And then, they'd both start making analogies at the same time.
You're wrong.
Oh, I see. It's like a rubber band on the end of a gym sneaker. Yeah, I see where you're going. They do that kind of thing. Yeah.
And let's,
that would be hilarious.
Let's also have like a really awkward conversation about Leah Brahms and how that all.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well,
totally.
that's the episode I'm looking forward to, season 8 episode with duplicate Geordi, where they both try to romance holographically Leah Brahms.
There you go. That's what I want right there.
If that were an original series episode, she would be a robot instead of a hologram, and her head would explode. That's how the episode would end.
Because of the awkwardness.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, how about a duplicate Picard?
Hmm.
Oh man!
The replicator would just die off.
We
have
the opportunity to see that.
The replicators would be overwhelmed with the amount of Earl Grey it would have to replicate.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, you're right. I mean, we do have a case where we do have a duplicate Picard, but I'm picturing like in this exact situation where he has to live with him on the ship, and we have Captain Picard, and we have Commander Picard or Lieutenant Maybe. Picard.
Hey, do you suppose it would be the same Picard we saw in Tapestry?
I was just thinking about that Picard.
Yeah, that would be really interesting.
But
I don't think it would be, because, I mean, you know, he was such a... That Picard was such a construct of this life that never really, like...
Right. Yeah, that Picard never actually existed.
It would probably be exactly the opposite. It would be Picard with less seasoning. It would be like a Shinzon Picard who wasn't, criminally insane. I feel like it would be a Picard who looked at older seasoned Picard and was like, how is this? Aren't you messing around with, you know, future pool and future pool halls and Nausicaans and student shooting ships?
Well, one I have to throw out there, and I'm doing this just because I know that Tristan is listening to the show, is the episode where Ensign Leffler is duplicated by a transporter accident.
There you go. That's the ticket.
I think that might be the best date you could have. Twin Lefflers. Argyle is all over that.
Oh, even more so than the Riker vibe, I think. The Leffler vibe, also very powerful.
Absolutely.
I mean, we know how it's captivated Chris on Twitter all these years, so.
Yes.
You know, even beyond Leffler, what about Beverly? I feel like Beverly might take herself to a nice dinner, treat herself really nice, walk herself to the door, and then invite herself in and have an even better night with herself.
And again, Argyle spying in on this whole thing is a very happy man.
Oh, this is great.
He's got the webcam set up in Beverly's room because he knows what happens in there.
You know, plus when they have Dancing with the Stars Enterprise Edition, Beverly is going to easily win that competition because she just dances with herself all the way through.
Just tap dance with her. Oh, that would be awesome.
It really would.
Would Beverly do Beverly would find every two-woman play in the Federation database and put it up in the Enterprise D Theater.
Mm. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
She could quit her career as a medical doctor and just perform all these two-lady shows throughout the galaxy, and she'd have it made.
It might be the strangest lesbian couple, but I still want to see it. I'm just saying.
You know, Matt, I'm very surprised you took it in this direction. I was thinking you were going to include yourself in this somehow as like the ultimate threesome.
Oh, no, that's right. No, yeah, no, because no. as we know from the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Matthew apparently wants to go out with Beverly. Is that right?
I have always loved Beverly, so when Dork Trek started making fun of poor Beverly, I was kind of heartbroken because I always enjoyed Beverly very much. I always found Gates' performance to be excellent, and unfortunately they just wrote Beverly not so well and never really gave her a lot to do. I think I was very obviously influenced by the Beverly I read in the novels, who's much stronger and it has a lot more going for her in general, honestly. And so I think it's a good character. And yes, Beverly is the one. I always over Troy. I just like redheads. What can I say?
You beat me to it, buddy. I was going to make a redhead joke. So
I can't lie. You know, I like them red.
There you go, buddy. All right.
I'm glad we're all being honest.
Yeah. Welcome to the Ready Room Therapy, everybody.
We've lost him.
He's dead, Jim.
Ooh, I almost had to barrel roll out of here because, wow.
Dude, speaking of barrel rolls.
I almost spit beer all over the place.
Yeah, we didn't mention the barrel roll that Troy and Thomas Riker were doing in the whole martial arts room. I mean, you know there was some action going on there. Pulsing unendingly through the night.
Yes.
And that's another time the room burst into hilarity.
Did you notice that all throughout the episode, Troy is wearing the original and the nice uniform, the blue, the teal, and everything. Mm-hmm. The minute she has sex with Tom, she pulls out the boob uniform again.
She did!
That's right.
Yes.
But she does it just to say, you know what? I'm just not that into you.
You know why?
How mean is that?
Because as good as Thomas Riker is, she is still overpowered by the vibe that is Will Riker. The original.
It's true.
Will Riker.
The one and only.
Will is so tuned in. Can you blame her? Because Will is so tuned in. Like, he's like, he doesn't even have to know. He's not even anywhere near the gym. Like, he's not spying like Argyle is, like, when they're having fancy time in the gym. Like, he just feels it. Like, he's hanging out in his quarters, right? He's watching his holographic harp women. And he gets this, like, tickle in his ear. And he's like, you know the Riker porn from season one. Mm, you remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's watching his harp women. And he gets this feeling in the back of his head. And he's like, that bastard. And he goes to 10 forward, puts his leg up on a windowsill and thinks it out, like, until she comes over there.
Yeah, but you know, yeah. The difference between Will Riker and Thomas Riker is that Will has the wisdom to know that Troy's going to come crawling back anytime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. When she shows up, he doesn't even have to look. He's just like, she is coming. Yep.
Well, at the end of the episode, when Thomas finally leaves, what is it, like 3 seconds before she's right on Will's arm again and they're walking out of the door and into the corridor?
See, it doesn't take long.
He's got that Imzadi sense. and it is really strong with Will Riker, and he can tell what her mood is, whether she's having some intimate times, some sexy times,
right?
Whether she's just exercising with Beverly and still having some sexy times.
to be honest, so, I mean, Will has had that whole 8 years, well, minus exactly. two, I guess, so 6 years together with Deanna on the ship. So they do have that tighter connection,
yeah.
Where, you know, Thomas is just coming at it from the angle of a Nimzadi rookie.
Right, yeah. It's a little more raw.
Exactly.
That I think is what Troy is attracted to, is the rawness that is Thomas Riker. He's got a little more energy, a little more recklessness in him, whereas 8 years with Will Riker has conditioned him into, you could say, a little more mellow.
A little more seasoned.
Seasoned? That might be the better way to
put it. That's a terrible thing to say to a man.
Yeah.
Bro, have you seen all the seasoning up here? I'm okay with it.
I am
too. Hey, you know what? As the only lady on this panel, I do have to say, you guys, by and large, guys have it way better with the seasoning that age brings, because you get older and you look better. As you get older, with women, very rarely does it work that way, and it sucks. I hate you all. Okay. I'm better now.
Sorry, Char. We apologize for all mankind.
Thank you.
But you're making a good point, Char, because, like, not only is Thomas Riker, yeah, he's different in a personality sense because he's 8 years, you know, the 8 year prior version, but he's also the guy who has spent all those 8 years on this planet pining away for one person, and it's Deanna.
Right, yeah. Right? He's had, like, no real new experiences for 8 years. All he's had is to dwell on the past and wanting to have it again someday, maybe, hanging on that little teeny thread.
Well, I don't know. He does have that one thing. He became a phaser artist.
That's true. Wow,
which was
That's
awesome.
True. And he did.
It was so cool.
It was cool.
But he did it for her, though. Like, he built it for her.
He did.
He like, fine-tuned a phaser.
Yeah.
Like, dude modified, like, a 9mm Beretta into, like, I don't even know, like, a Dremel tool. Like, he changed an M16 rifle into a power drill. Like, I mean, that kind of modification only comes from real love. That beautiful damn thing.
And boredom.
And boredom.
Well, and yes. And probably, yeah, 2.5 years of just solid effort after he got tired of Words with Friends.
I thought that it was, well, and Words with Friends with the computer is cheating because it always wins.
Right.
And we've seen how playing with the computer is. Like, we've seen Jordy play games with the computer, and it's just not fun.
It's just
does
not
go well.
I am a bunch of boring crap in alphabetical order. Go ahead.
I was, you know, it's funny too. I kind of expected it to be a little bit of a more risque picture too. I mean, if you're thinking about the last time you spent with Troy,
right?
Aren't you expecting something like a little sexier? I mean, it's just a waterfall.
Well,
that's it.
Honestly,
the thought
that's
you through.
Innuendo, Matthew. Haven't you been paying attention on this ship we're flying?
Also, they had to show it on camera.
So the waterfall was innuendo.
Otherwise, right. It would have been a naked picture of Troy. Let's face it.
I wouldn't complain.
Well, probably you and every other guy, but remember, TNG is a family-friendly show. You have to read between the lines, but when you're a young and naive child watching this show, this stuff is all above you. The rest of us figure That's this true. Out, but it's still family-friendly. You just have to read between the lines.
I don't know. I learned all I need to know about sex from Will Riker, so...
Hey, man, you learned from the best guy in the whole galaxy.
The best swinger in the galaxy.
Yeah, him and Jim Kirk.
Yeah, that was a good book. That was the book that came out after Everything I Need to Know About Life I Learned from Star Trek, right?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
That's what Will Riker ran from, was Captain Kirk's Guide to Women, and then he wrote his own.
Totally worth it.
Totally.
So we've been talking about a little bit here the need for therapy. And let's talk on a serious note again for a minute about some of the discussions that Troy has. There's, in particular, the scene in 10 Forward after the scavenger hunt when she is talking to Thomas and she's kind of baring her soul about that. But this brings up a point from the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Before we get into the serious part, Michael... No. You have a story about the scavenger hunt. I really want to hear
it. Yeah,
this.
Me too.
You ever agree to tell a story and then like instantly regret it?
Too late, buddy.
So, is this a fat story?
This is something else. I haven't told many people this. And I don't know what the Trek FM listenership is like, but I hope they're lovely, and I know they're nice people. I was very, very, very easily influenced by Star Trek as a child and as a preteen and as a teenager. And I decided that in about 10th grade, I think, or 9th, that I liked a girl who was not one of my friends, who I didn't know already. She was just a girl I'd never actually interacted with, but I liked her a lot. And so I proceeded to... blatantly rip off this sappy scavenger hunt from Second Chances and construct it and spread it all over the school building. I think there were maybe about 5 or 6 stops. It was more elaborate than Riker's. It was a lot of effort.
Okay. I have a question. Please. So this took place in the school?
It did, in the school building. Yeah. Over lunch hour, I think. I triggered it, yeah.
When you told her it pulses unendingly all through the night, what were you talking about?
Well, you know...
was that the air conditioning room?
Yeah. I think... I wish I had saved some of the originals, because I know that not only did I rip off the idea, but I am positive that I did something exactly like that, where I was like, it's the closest analog I can find to the warp core. Like, what pulses... unendingly. Completely missing out on the double entendre that got all of us viewers in the room cracking up at the episode tonight. Anyway, point is, I had not really thought this entire thing through till the end. So I had no idea what I was going to do when she finally got to the end of the damn scavenger hunt. And when she did, in fact, get to the end of the scavenger hunt, I was just kind of like sheepishly there, like in this kind of, I don't remember what I said, but my entire attitude was like, well, here I am.
And, so you were missing the vibe factor that Riker
I was
had.
Completely, I had none of the, faux Riker vibe that I currently possess.
So did it work?
All you needed to do was to have put your leg up on something and kind of stuck your, you know, backside out just a little bit, and she would have been yours.
Done a little squint. That's all. I was a squint away from success, and unfortunately, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know the ways. All I had was my Navy ROTC uniform and a little bit of hope. And sadly, so the way this worked out is that there was much giggling and running away. And to this day, I still have not ever had a full conversation with this lovely person, who is, in fact, lovely. But it is just awkward even a decade and a half later. So, kids, don't rip off ideas from Star Trek unless you're sure you can make them work.
Yeah.
And that applies outside of spacecraft as
right.
well.
Right.
I think we may have learned that unless you have the Riker vibe, you just don't have it.
That's a solid. Yeah, you know, they should put that on a T-shirt.
That's a really good PSA right there.
I have it needle pointed on a pillow on my bed. So
it's a good reminder. It's a good thing to wake up to in the morning. You want to get that downer right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make sure you know where you stand every morning.
Right.
Well, let's go back to the serious side of this, the tail end of the scavenger hunt in the actual episode, when this conversation between Deanna and Thomas is, it's interesting and it's kind of,
odd?
Disconcerting, I don't know. It's like...
yes.
The reason I say that is because she's like really bearing her soul about what happened between them. And you really feel it, I think, from a woman's perspective of what happened in terms of that relationship. But she's telling it to someone who is and isn't Will. It's almost like it's so personal and she's telling it to Will, but she's actually telling it to another person.
Right. And you would think as a counselor, she would know better than to do that, because that's usually a sign of some kind of problem when you do that, when you spill your life story to essentially who is now a stranger. But I actually have a bigger problem with the fact of her telling this to Thomas, because she's telling him what he wants to hear. So that's what I mean with her just totally instantly falling for the Thomas Riker vibe. Because, I mean, you do not go here unless you want to go here. This is a very blatant decision on her behalf. She has to know what she's getting into.
She's kept it bottled up all of this time that she's been on the Enterprise with Will. She's kept this bottled up all this time. And, I mean,
yeah, it's bad.
Maybe because they were back together on the ship, it was easier for her to kind of ease back into having him around. But you can tell that it's really something, yes, that she's been holding up inside, and then suddenly it all comes out, but it's coming out to, like you said, someone who is actually a stranger, because let's not forget he is Cloud Man. He's not actually
William
Riker, who she had been with on Beta Zed.
Yeah, for a counselor, she has no healthy boundaries.
Well, and what I didn't understand too is that, you know, not only should she open up to him like this, but then obviously she beds him in the exercise room and, you know, sends him all of these signals. And then, you know, then she puts on the boob uniform for him just to let him down easily to say, you know what? I'm actually going to do what you did to me like 8 years ago. I'm going to put my career and myself in front of you.
Yeah, and so, like,
It enabled her to it enabled her almost to be able to replay the same episode that she'd had early in her life, but from the other side.
Oh my God, okay.
And now it's almost like her and Commander Riker are on the same wavelength, like they're on the same playing field. So now they can move forward.
But it sounds like you're saying that she's doing it maliciously, like she's getting back and turning the table, but I don't think that's
I'm just saying that from Charlene's point, that she's a counselor, she should know better, but even somebody like her, it still becomes this kind of instinctual thing. Like, you've been hurt and you don't know whether you can trust that person again, and you want to kind of give into it, and you kind of do for a little bit, and then you realize, I can't go there, you know?
Okay. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I found the scene between those two deeply therapeutic, like, you know, for both of them, because of the obvious reasons, because in reasons you guys have already stated. Now, I agree that Troy was breaching some professional boundaries here and, you know, maybe doing something that wasn't terribly healthy for Thomas. But, man, you know, you can tell that these are things that she has wanted to say for so long that she actually forgot she wanted to say them. So her initial reaction when he mauled her face off was like, no, listen, things are changed. But then she's, you know, she's got it in her mind, and she's like, well, I mean, I wouldn't be able to resist the urge to share that. I'm very in touch with like regret and you know, how that powers decision-making, and sometimes a good idea and sometimes not. But what I love about that scene is that it doesn't get a chance to go over the top. I mean, even when they start talking about that really saccharine stuff about maybe we were both looking at the same star on the same night, it gets to that point where you're almost ready to say, and then what happens? Thomas Riker's line is, you know, maybe there's a chance that, what am I talking about? Like, he just dumps it. And it's because it sounds to him like it sounds to us.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
That between the performances and the writing, and this scene is just done masterfully. I think it's one of the high points of the episode, and it could be one of the most cringeworthy points.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's how I felt.
Well, it could have come off very, very poorly, like you said, because it does get very, very saccharine. But I actually think it was performed quite well, and I actually felt. I'm not a huge Troy fan. Like I don't feel like Marina Sirtis's performances, they don't grab me very much in The Next Generation. But this was one where I really felt like I was watching her as a real person, and I really felt the emotion from her in the scene. And I actually, my thought at the time was that, yeah, this is like a therapy session for Troy.
Yeah.
She's usually the one sitting down and giving the advice. And this was a moment where her whole guard came down, and you could see how what was pent up inside her.
Right. And you would think
this scene, yeah, probably is kind of the high point of the episode.
You would think, though, as a counselor, she would realize that this is not a good thing to do. But at the same time, I can see why Thomas Riker would bring this out of her. She does feel like she knows him. This is just Commander Riker 8 years removed. She remembers that guy. Is it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
No. But I can see why she went there, and yet, shame on you. You should have your license revoked.
And this is one of those times, I think, that the Next Generation actually becomes really relatable to us, and that we all understand what it's like to be faced with that person that we kind of wish that we had been in a relationship with, or that it had gone differently, and we kind of come to that moment when we're with them the next time where, you know, we want to say some things, and maybe we do, or maybe we don't. Maybe we say them better than Troy did, or maybe we don't. But this becomes really relatable, and I think that that's one of the things that stands out to me in this episode, because a lot of times these characters kind of stand out as being far removed from where I am as a person. But this is a relationship issue, and this is a very relational episode. This is kind of a character episode, which is very strange for the Next Generation to really kind of get into. And the more that we've talked about it just even here, the more I'm thinking that this episode is actually better than when I was even watching it, because there's a lot more going on here. And there's a lot more that goes on here that I can relate to, because I can feel what Troy's feeling. I can feel what Riker's feeling. I can feel what Thomas Riker's feeling, because I felt all of those feelings at one point in my life.
Exactly.
And they've all been extremely painful.
Right. Yeah, who
honestly
doesn't go through that relationship that they either regret happened with the outcome, or just wish it didn't happen in the first place because it just ended so horribly, or something to that effect. This episode made me think about, what if I encountered my double that was 8 years removed, emotionally stunted over the last 8 years? How would we get along? And you know what? My answer is,
I think there would be a lot of profanity for it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Because the person I was 8 years removed is incredibly different from the person I am now. I mean, I could probably go on for an entire hour alone just on who that person was and why we would not get along. I have changed a lot since then. But you know what? A lot of people would. So I loved the whole interplay between Thomas Riker and William Riker not getting along, because, as much friction as there was between those guys, and that was pretty tame. No, what would happen between two Charlins would be even worse, because of who I was back then as compared to who I am now. We would have words.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny to see Jonathan Frakes able to bring out, to kind of shade in some of those differences really nicely in moments that the script didn't necessarily, you know, require. I mean, like, there's a lot of nuanced work going on there. And Tom, at points in this latest rewatch, I was able to see more than I'd ever seen before just how tender and hurt and fragile Tom Riker is.
Absolutely. Yes.
Because he still has that younger mentality, but also the one where he's been by himself for 8 damn
right.
years.
That's not an easy thing to pull off as an actor. But I thought he did it beautifully, too. I really loved the contrast.
Yeah.
Watching those two interact.
There's an earnestness. There's an earnestness yes. to Tom that there isn't necessarily in Will, because Will has that seasoning and he has that seniority now that he doesn't have to have that earnestness. He already, in a lot of ways, thinks through all of his decisions and his thought processes and everything. Tom is still very much that lieutenant. I mean, their ranks really put them where they are. And the fact that I think that, again, Frakes pulls that out and makes that in the performance, just the little cues he gives to their differences, it's a great job by him.
Totally.
It's excellent. And Lieutenant Riker is... he still has the whole future ahead of him. He's still the Riker who's thinking he wants to have his own command by the time he's 35, and he's driving. And Commander Riker is the Riker who, I think, regrets the fact that he keeps turning down offers of command, regrets the fact that he and Deanna are not actually in the relationship at this point. I think he regrets a lot of the... it's not regret like he sits in his quarters at night sobbing about it, but it's just kind of like this, because at the end of the episode, near the end of the episode, when they are on the bridge and the bridge collapses and there's this kind of over the top climb, climb, climb. I'm like, give him a second, he'll climb. But this scene though, and Thomas says, you know, one of us has to get out of here. That's the point where, I mean, the whole episode has been Commander Riker, Lieutenant Riker, these two different points in his life fighting against one another and how they see the world, how they see the course of their life, and what decisions they want to make. And then there we actually have it manifest where, you know, Thomas is telling him that at some point in your life, you have to let go of the past. You have to make a decision, you have to set a course, and you have to let go. But of course, Will, because we're dealing with people, he's not going to let Thomas die. But at the same time, what it made me think of is, like, do we actually want to let go of these things, or do we somehow, do we thrive on the strife itself? You know, do we thrive because we can sit and debate all of these things in our own minds and we don't really want to let go?
Well, you are touching.
I'll say a little bit of, okay, we'll go, I'll do a little Troy therapy here with myself.
Okay, because you're going to go the same place I was going to go, because I thought, speaking of therapy, if you guys really want to know some things about me, now's the time. But go ahead, Matt, please.
Well, one of the things I was going to say is that I've noticed in my own life, there's this place that I want to go, but the problem is that it's unknown. And what I've done before is safe. So I can keep doing the same thing, or I can do something new that I know is probably going to be better for me. And there's this dichotomy of this pull in my life of, okay, I want to be a better person. I want to grow. I want to learn new things. I want to change. I want to become somebody that's better. But I've done so many things in my past, and I'm kind of comfortable. At least I know what the repercussions of those things are. And so this whole pull of this back and forth, and Will is going through this right now in this episode, is he's face to face, literally, with himself, making the person who would have made all those bad decisions the moment he got off that planet, to some of the ones that he regrets. Where will he go from here? And you know, unfortunately, TNG doesn't answer any of these questions for us, because they never will, because they don't do that with their characters. But at least it posed that question to us, you know, and I think at least in this episode, you get that feeling like when they walk out of that door, Troy and Riker, it almost feels like Riker's thinking to himself, this might be some close to a new start for us sometime soon. and then, of course, the writers kind of screw us by giving us Troy and Worf.
Yeah.
God knows what they were thinking. So, you know, I just think that that's one of those things, you know, this episode does that, at least. It puts that question out there.
The show still is, though, very faithful to the Commander Riker that we've seen, that grew tremendously, and in no better example than in that Best of Both Worlds episode where he's like, listen, I'm getting older, I'm the Enterprise, should I stay in the Enterprise, should I go? And they have that wonderful, mm-hmm. he and Deanna have that wonderful conversation in 10 Forward.
Right.
And so, but that Riker, who by the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 2 is comfortable with his life and knows that he can shoulder the burdens of command, but he wants to stay where he is still present in this episode. And we see him in the poker game, which is, I think, the climax of the Tom and Will showdown, because it just is a giant burn fest, right? And they're just hating yeah. all over each other. And it's great. It's just, oh my God, I got goosebumps. And Tom's trying to call Will out, and he's like, yeah, you do like to play it safe, Commander. And Will's like, yeah, whatever. That's why I'm awesome, Lieutenant. But Will has this great, great line where he says, I know what I want. I know what I've got. And you'd be lucky to do so well.
Yes.
And then he basically drops the mic and wins the poker.
yeah.
Boom, roasted.
Boom, roasted.
Boom. It's just so, and it's great to see. And I think that is what would happen in an interaction with my duplicate, who I think my 8 year prior duplicate would see my life as some sort of you know safe compromise. In contrast to the bold choices that he thinks I should have made, and I think I would really love to tell him to shut up, because you know what I mean, and not from the spiteful point of like yes you're right, but from the point of like my priorities have changed and you don't understand that because you're a kid and you're an idiot, and that's the sense that I got from that
right.
scene. And
I didn't ever get the sense from Will Riker that he had a whole lot of not necessarily regret. It was more wisdom. I've learned from the things that I've done. You have not. Mm. You have not gone here yet, Thomas. You have a lot of things to learn. And that's pretty much what I would tell my old self without going into great detail, because she lived rather recklessly, didn't really give a shit about anything. And now I've actually got some purpose to my life that's beyond the one little thing that she focused on way back when. And it's a lot more meaningful, and I'm actually quite happy with that. And I have everything that she wanted. But I had to make a leap of faith that you were talking about, Matthew, of the unknown, facing the unknown, going there. I had to do that to achieve who I am now. That girl had not done that yet, and it was very, very scared of doing that. So, there you go.
Can you ask more of Star Trek than to give us a conversation like this?
Hell no.
I don't think you can. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it when an episode prompts this kind of discussion. Yeah.
Well, and who would have thought that a Riker and Troy and Riker romance would do it?
The ultimate threesome.
Biggest Riker fanboy on the planet right here.
What's better than one Riker? Two Rikers. Yeah.
What's better than two Rikers? Two Rikers with Troy.
Yeah,
pulsating endlessly throughout the night. Yow!
That's a lot of pulsating.
Pulsating.
So I think this episode did a really good job of leading us through those steps, you know, that we've just discussed. And we get to see it from Troy's point of view, and we get to see it from Thomas's point of view, and we get to see it from Will's point of view, and then it all builds up. And then you... Shar, you said that when we were talking about their discussion in 10 Forward that, you know, you think Troy, she wants to go back there. She wants to go back to that past with Thomas. And I was thinking that because I have these points in my life, like maybe 12, 14 years ago, where when I think back to them now, I remember all the good moments of, and
yes.
And it's kind of silly, and it's not a relationship thing. It's just, part of it is that I used to work really far away from where I live, and the commute was really difficult, and it was really exhausting. But I also used to spend that time on the train writing and, or, you know, reading or listening to music. And when I think back to it now, I remember the writing and I remember the reading. You know, I don't remember the big guy using my shoulder as a pillow. I don't remember being, you know, spending 45 minutes smashed like I'm in a sardine can when it's, you know, 35 Celsius outside. I don't remember any of that. You always remember the good moments and you forget
the
bad moments.
I think
as
memory
time
likes
goes
to
by.
Romanticize yeah. the past for us. We remember
right,
the good,
exactly.
we don't remember the bad unless it's really, really bad and we can't forget.
Right. And so here, you know, she's remembering all those good moments and what could have been with Riker when she looks at Thomas. But by the time we get to the end, you know, she's, I think in her mind, there's that scene where, and it's towards the end and she's in her quarters and she's, you know, flipping her hair in the mirror. And you can tell she's very giddy. And then the door opens and Thomas comes in. But then when he tells her that he has secured an assignment on another ship, and then everything deflates and she, you know, realizes that, you know, maybe I don't want to go down this road again.
Right.
And that's ultimately the decision that she makes. And that comes back around, Matthew, to what you were saying earlier about how she was basically able to relive the course of events, except it's kind of in reverse this time. It's she's the one choosing her career over him. But I think ultimately, what I like about the message in this episode is that they lead you all the way through all of this thought process. But by the end, she makes at least what I would consider the right decision and a difficult decision to come to. But she does choose to move forward and not let that romantic remembrance of the past get the better of her and take her back into the same situation all over again.
Really, really hard to do. You said it, Chris, but it is a very difficult decision.
It
to
is
have to make
very
to
difficult.
Resist that. That urge.
Well, and one of the things too is you can almost see that if she's going to make the choice to be with Riker again, she wants to be with Commander Riker because they have grown in some of the same ways. You know, Lieutenant Riker is still trapped in the past. He still has that kind of a. He's really arrested development at this point,
right?
Because he hasn't been able to develop as a person, and so, but the person that she really still connects with is Will. They have this relationship of respect and love that isn't romantic right now, but it's still love. That they very much value each other as people and who they are. They have become, and so that if a relationship is going to happen. That's really going to happen that way.
Exactly.
And I think that's what we ultimately see later on in, when Insurrection rolls around. And one of the best parts of Insurrection was allowing them to have that full bloom of love finally come out that, look, we've got to stop fighting this. We just need to go for it.
Seriously.
And so
Beverly was right all along.
Yeah, you should hit that.
Yeah, Beverly was right. They just needed to hit that. So, you know. Poor Beverly, unfortunately, you know, can't get Picard until the novels come out. But we'll talk about that on Literary Treks.
You know, the bubble bath was Beverly's idea. We just never
actually
saw the representation on screen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and I think, you know, the best part of this episode is that in the end, the episode finishes with Riker giving the bone to himself.
yes.
Which, you know, honestly,
well played.
I think that's actually a little better than what we could have had, which was the ultimate threesome.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh God.
I think Lily said that like the minute the other Riker showed up.
That's the no. That is the ultimate devil's threesome.
True.
So two dudes, one
as
lady.
As we discussed
but
on
it's
iMessage,
two dudes as your whoa,
the good old wobbly H.
Whoo.
You know, there's the line when they're standing in 10 forward by the windows, Troy and Commander Riker, and Troy says, "This must be very strange for you." And Will says, "If you want to see strange, bring the lieutenant up to deck 8 at 2300 hours."
So maybe that happened. We just didn't get to see it. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I feel like they should have just invited Beverly to the party.
Oh, she was there watching. You know she was.
She was hanging out with Argyle.
Yeah, exactly. She and Argyle are actually really good friends. Nobody knows about this.
Yeah, that was the real relationship we never got to see on the show with Beverly and Argyle.
Yeah.
I have to say the best thing to ever come out of Dora Trek was the new and improved Chief Engineer Argyle Jeffries to really? Hobo.
Totally.
Hats off to Dork Trek once again.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
Can you imagine cleaning up all the Jeffries tubes after Beverly and Argyle have been through them?
My. Oh, Jesus.
Tap shoes and beard shavings.
And gin everywhere.
That's
everywhere.
A big mess.
Or as Lori would say, that's a hot mess.
Yes, yes.
Right. I'm sorry, Chris, but I just wanted to jump in to ask, did we see, was this one of those special episodes where we saw the special cameo of, was that Dr. Macy Jameson?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Okay, good. I thought I saw her on the transporter console, and I was like, is it, and nobody in the room knew what I was talking about, so I was like, what? So I just Google image searched her, and I was like, I think that was her behind the transporter. So,
yes. Yeah,
that
yes.
Was. Really yeah, cool.
That's right.
Love it when Star Trek.
I'm glad you mentioned this. Yes.
Yeah.
Just, it, you know, completely tangential to the story and everything, but it's great to see real astronauts on Star Trek. I get a real nerdgasm when that happens. So.
Totally. Yeah.
And they're not wearing a giant fish costume or anything weird.
Right.
It's actually
yeah.
them.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. If you know it's her, you can actually see, oh, it's her. Cool.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're passing an hour, so why don't we wrap up our discussion of Second Chances with our final thoughts and our ratings. So, Michael, you are our guest panelist today. Why don't you kick us off here?
Thank you. What I have not done a rating yet because it's been so long. What is the scale?
There is no scale.
Anything you
just
want
make
it
up.
To be, and the vaguer and the more mysterious, the better. We have a listener who is putting together a whole chart to try to figure out what our ratings mean. And
good.
If they do figure it out, I think they deserve a Nobel Prize.
Right. So
that's outstanding.
Make it as complicated as possible.
Absolutely. I'm just going to go ahead and steal a Calvin Ball score for my rating, which is Q to 12 for this episode. And the reasons for that are because of all the deeper stuff we talked about tonight. And in particular, the notion of being able to have an interaction with oneself, an earlier version of oneself, that allows you to question and reflect on the decisions you've made. And the levels of profundity and enjoyable self-analysis that produces are about as much as you can ask from an episode of a sci-fi series. So big old golf clap to Second Chances from me.
You know, I was thinking about a rating, and I'd have to give this 7 nautical beards for, as Michael said, really adding to the discussion that we had about facing your former self, kind of facing some of those former demons that maybe you had, choices that you made that you may or may not be proud of. In some ways, being able to kind of relive the past then through them and see how you've come out on top, maybe where you might want to move forward, and maybe even what that, you know, past self might be able to teach you, and maybe you might be missing something. Riker gets that opportunity here, and, you know, during the poker game, as we talked about, he does get to say, look, if you had what I had, if you knew what I knew, and you were going where I was going, you'd be lucky to have it. You know, Riker's able to come to that decision and be very firm and thankful for who he is. And I think that in our lives, we need to be able to say, when we look at ourselves, you know what? I'm thankful for where I am, where I've come from, and where I'm going. And I think that this episode helps us to be able to sit back for maybe a few minutes and think about our own lives and say, you know what? I've made some crappy mistakes. I've done some really crappy things to some people. But in all that I've learned, I wouldn't take it back because I wouldn't be who I am today. And now then, how can I move forward then and grow and be better? And because we can have this discussion because of a silly sci-fi TV show, that's amazing. So yeah, this gets hands down 7 Riker beards.
Fantastic. You pretty much copied everything I wanted to say, Matt. Because watching...
I win!
No, you do not. You do not win
Matthew
yet,
Matthew duplicated
Mister.
Your
you
final
watch
thoughts
it.
With the transporter accident.
Well, it, you know, okay, watching this episode in and of itself, it feels like, it's okay. It's a good episode. You know, you kind of get entrenched in the whole Riker and Troy and Riker romance, the weird kind of dynamic that's going on there. I like that aspect of it. But then, yeah, you get deeper and you start thinking about how this applies to you. And then it starts to get really freaking interesting. And you think, well, then, yeah, this is pretty freaking good. Okay, I really like this. And it definitely gives me a much deeper appreciation for the episode. And I relate to so many aspects of this thing. I mean, I can see it from Troy's point of view. I can see it from Thomas's point of view. I can see it from Will's point of view. I've kind of actually identify with Will the most just because of that one line of, I know what I have, or I know what I've got, and, you know, and you'd be lucky to have as much. Dude, that's pretty much how I feel in my life these days. I'm extraordinarily lucky, and I know it. And damn, there's no way I could redo what I've done. I lucked out. I know this. And so where do I go from there? Yeah, that definitely brings up a great question to ponder, Matt. I'm really, really glad you brought that up. So I really thank this episode for kind of giving me that introspection and thinking about, well, what would happen if I met up with somebody 8 years removed from my life? And who was emotionally stunted. And, you know, to be honest, I'm glad I'm not that person anymore. Definitely. Definitely. As good as that person was, she's not me. Mm-mm. So I'm going to give this 8 warp cores pulsating endlessly throughout the night.
That's a good rating. You know, for me, this episode represents why Star Trek has endured for more than 45 years, because I was 21 when this episode aired the first time. And when I watched it back then, I watched a story about Commander Riker being duplicated in a transporter accident, and now there's two Rikers on the ship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have to try to work together. And, you know, the deeper points that we've discussed here today didn't connect with me when I was 21 years old, because I didn't have that experience in my life at that point. But now I'm 40 and I watch this episode today, and it connects with me on so many different levels. And I think it's the great thing about Star Trek is that you can watch the same stories at so many different moments through your life, and you can get very different things from those stories. And that's why it endures so long. That's why it is loved by so many people. And so this episode for me is a great examination of Riker. In particular, we get to see Troy in a way that we rarely get to see her on the show as well. And this is a much better episode than I remembered it being. I had not seen it in quite a while before watching it again to get ready for this discussion. And so I'm going to give this episode 8 space bases, along with 8 ladies in blue dresses to play them.
Nice.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today for the discussion. And Michael, before we go, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
I can be found on Twitter in 2 places, at Fats Riker Beard, spelled like it sounds, where I increasingly infrequently discuss things ranging from Riker beards to Star Trek to faux art on Instagram. I spend much more time at Captain Two Phones. It's Captain the number 2 Phones, where I discuss mobile technology from smartphones to tablets in my capacity as an editor at pocketnow.com.
Excellent. And Matthew, tell everyone, of course you are on Trek FM all the time, but tell everyone where to find you if they want to hear more of your thoughts on Star Trek.
Well, a couple of places, actually 3 places, the trifecta. First, Literary Treks, where we talk books and comics with my esteemed colleague Christopher Jones, as well as The Orb, where we talk Deep Space Nine, again with Christopher Jones. I'm a lucky man. What can I say?
Christopher Jones guy, anyway.
he's really fantastic. You have to meet him.
He sounds like Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah,
he is everywhere. And so, you know, I actually met him when I was down in New Zealand at the Green Dragon, the Hobbit pub. It was fantastic. So it was really, we've been best friends ever since.
Me too.
Yeah.
This is an awesome story. I'm sorry.
That's a sly ploy. We'll see if Chris goes for it. Actually though, if you want to talk to me most of the time though, you can find me on the Twitter at MattRushing02, talking Star Trek, all sorts of things. Of course, I'll be talking lots of sports ball since my 49ers are going to be playing the Baltimore Orioles in the Super Bowl. And so,
well,
yes,
I have a feeling they're going to kick the Orioles' asses since they don't actually play football.
Well, that's true.
You mean the Ravens, right?
Yes, Baltimore Ravens.
Just don't cheat in Ambo Jitsu. That's all I'm saying.
Sports ball.
And Char, tell everyone where they can find you if they want to partake in your double vodka, the pleasure activities, as your screen name says today.
You may or may not want to do that, but if you do want to seek that out.
Is Beverly involved with this double vodka pleasure?
Maybe. Not telling. You'll have to find out for yourself. Seek me out on the Twitters at Oh the Profanity.
Excellent. All right. Great discussion today, guys. Thanks a lot.
Well, Chris, I thought that was a fantastic discussion of second chances and the things that it makes us think about. Because at a superficial level, this episode is really just, you could just kind of take it for what it is and okay, it's an episode. But if you take it a level deeper, you're thinking about some pretty intense things.
Yeah, like I said in the final thoughts, 21-year-old me gave it a warp factor 6.5. You know, it was an episode, but 40-year-old me, yeah, sees a lot more depth in it. So I'm glad we were able to pull that out. I know we started out very silly and ridiculous because, I mean, come on, you've got two Rikers. What are you going to do? But
right?
I'm glad we were able to dig more deeply into it as we went along.
We did. We got over the goofy stuff first because, let's face it, there's a lot of potential here. But there's also a lot of great components to this episode that really make it a very awesome TNG episode. Much more than meets the eye. Much more than I remembered it as well.
Yeah, it is. I think going back through TNG and watching with fresh eyes, you find a lot of those episodes that were forgettable episodes for you the first time through that kind of become your favorites. It happens with other series too. I mean, a few months ago on here, we did Children of Time from DS9, which I hated when it first came on. I thought it was the worst episode of Deep Space Nine ever. Mm. But now I think it's a fantastic episode because I'm able to connect with it very much in the way that I'm able to connect with Second Chances now.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Well, why don't we tell everyone where they can contact us if they want to share their thoughts on Second Chances or anything else we talked about today? Go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send a message to a show and choose the Ready Room. And you'll also find us over on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, where we have a rapidly growing community right now. And so I hope you'll come over and talk to us there.
Yeah,
and of course,
I've
you'll find
that.
Us on Twitter under username trekfm, where Char and Drew and Greg and myself all tweet from that account. Now,
yes.
Char, what if people want to have a little bit of profanity in their lives? Where can they find you?
And I can deliver. Come visit me at Oh the Profanity on Twitter, and I would be happy to exchange some profanity with you.
She really
and
will.
Where can they reach you?
Take her up on that. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much anywhere in the social media world under that username. So give me a follow and send me an @reply and say hello and chat me up. And I generally talk about Star Trek, music, sports ball, Japan design, and sometimes my daily life. But as Tanya and I say, we do it living Star Trek. There's a Star Trek twist on
indeed
those
tweets, you do. Know,
keep it in that, you know, we want to be in universe when we're talking about things there. So
you want to be in the prime universe? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the prime universe.
Remember, right. Folks, send your hate mail to C. Brian Jones. I'm kidding. Yeah.
And we also want to take a moment and say thank you to our sponsor, Squarespace, the mm-hmm. easiest way to make fantastic websites or blogs. They're really the easiest tools that you'll find out there. You can go try them free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. Go to squarespace.com/trek. And if you decide to sign up, you can use offer code TREK1 to get 10% off of your lifetime purchase with Squarespace. So go check them out.
Fantastic.
And we also would invite you to go over to the website, trek.fm. We have 11 shows going now. There's something Woo! For just about any little niche of the Star Trek universe that you can think of. Go over there and check out all of our shows, and you can find the listing at trek.fm/PD, the short link to podcasts. Well, Char, I think that wraps up another Ready Room, so let's let everyone go, and I'm going to wander off and ask Beverly for some relationship advice.
All right. Well, you know, I think it's time to stick some of Riker's vibe in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Recording.
My waveform is really small.
That's what she said.
All right, I turned up the gain a little bit. I don't think I'm peaking too much. Good.
Yeah, but your Yeti looks normal size. Well,
girthy as ever.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Well, this won't take long tonight.